Now to a breakthrough in a medieval money mystery. I don't know if you've caught the latest issue of Antiquity, the peer-reviewed archaeology journal based at Durham University, but it's carried news of new insights into long-standing debates in early medieval archaeology. In the late 7th century, silver coinage started to be used in Northwest Europe, transforming the economies of the time. But where did the silver in the coins come from? Well, spoiler alert, according to our next guest, the answer is probably Byzantine silver treasures and a French silver mine. Dr. Jane Kershaw is an associate professor at Oxford University School of Archaeology and the lead author of the new paper in Antiquity, and I'm very pleased to say she joins us now. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Could you explain what the medieval money mystery was, and I suppose in particular the state of the debate before your new research?
Of course. We have this incredible phenomenon from the late 7th into the 8th century, which is that people started to mint silver coins for the first time since the Romans had left Britain. So it's been a couple of hundred years, no silver coinage. And then fairly suddenly, around 670 or 675, they start to produce silver coins, fairly low value, something like 15, 20 pounds in kind of today's British currency. So not small change, but not really high value either. And what's astonishing is that this is a huge currency. They produce millions of coins, so people must have been using them in everyday transactions, and not just people in towns, but people in the countryside as well. We have 7,000 of these coins discovered sort of archaeologically. And so when we have this huge silver coinage, a natural question is, where does the silver come to support it? And there had been a few ideas. A prominent idea was that it came from a mine in Western France called Mel. And there had been a recent idea from studies of ice cores from the Alps that it was because of Mel, mining at Mel, because of lead signatures in the ice cores in the Alps. So that was our leading hypothesis. But there'd been other suggestions as well. Was it old Roman silver that had been left lying around in what's today Britain and France that was gathered up and made into coinage? Was it coinage that had come over from the Islamic lands that had a really vibrant silver coinage at this period that was melted down? And then we had a fairly left of field thought that it might be Byzantine silver as well. That was not in our top three options. So when we carried out the analysis, we got the lead isotope results, and it was clear that it was nothing to do with a source local to Europe, that it had to come from further afield. So we were pretty surprised.
Before we get into the coins a little bit more, let's talk about a coinage that I wasn't familiar with, Jane. The period that you're referring to is described as the long 8th century. Now, I'm no master of maths, but how can a century last from 660 AD to 820?
Yeah, no, of course it doesn't at all. And it's a phrase that historians like to describe this period, because I think things don't seem to sort of neatly start in 700 and end in 800. Really, we see this sort of quite profound societal changes from kind of 670s onwards, and going into the sort of 820s, 830s or so. So it's just a kind of a phrase that makes sure we encapsulate that extended period of time.
Good to know. Well, let's get back to the actual coins. Now, what you've done in this new research is a systematic geochemical method not previously applied to coins of this era. So what is that new method? And I think you mentioned that there are about 7,000 of these coins. How many did you apply these new methods to?
Yeah, so in a way, we just scratched the surface. We did 51 coins. Two of those turned out to be not true silver coins. One, we think, was a forgery from the 7th century, in that it was silver had been applied to a base metal. So it had passed a silver coin, but it wasn't really. And another one, we think, a coin from minted in mines in Germany, was actually a modern fake. So somebody had produced that coin, you know, today, and it had somehow got into the collection of the Fitzwilliam Museum. So that left us with 49 coins. So it's a small sample of the total number of coins that are available for analysis. But actually, no one's done this analysis before. And in archaeometric terms, that's quite a sizable number of coins to analyse.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Dr. Jane Kershaw, Associate Professor at Oxford University's School of Archaeology, about these new systematic methods, which I gather, Jane, are minimally invasive techniques. What exactly did you do to these coins and what did it enable you to reveal about them?
Yeah, so we used two methods in combination. One is to get the lead isotope data from the coins. Although they're silver coins, there'll be about 1% of lead in them in this period. And that means that we can analyze the atomic variants of the leads and we generate their lead isotope ratios. And those ought to relate to the original ore source of the silver. We then also captured trace element analysis because very small variations in things like gold and bismuth, which are also contained in the coin, will also relate to the original source ore. Gold and bismuth in particular don't change when the silver is melted down and remade into something new, so they remain consistent over time. So if we get these variations in the trace elements and in the isotopes, we should be able to narrow down potential sources. So that's what we did. Yes, we were very pleased to be able to use minimally invasive methods. You know, 40 years ago, somebody would have probably clipped the edge of a coin and got off a large chunk of silver, damaging the coin. But these are museum artifacts. They're very precious. We don't want to visibly damage them in any way. So we sampled them with a laser. So you have a beam that has the diameter of a strand of human hair. So it's tiny, you can't see it. It ablates a smaller amount of material, which is then captured through a vacuum. And then that material is put through a mass spec for generating lead isotope results. And what was really special with this analysis in particular is that we used a portable laser. So normally we would take coins to an earth science lab and use the machine that's in place in a lab. But here we brought in a laser into the museum and analyze coins on the spot. We took the sampling on the spot through this portable laser. And this is great because it really means that museum curators don't have to travel, so it's easier to arrange, it's quicker and cheaper. And also the result that the samples can be treated through wet chemistry, which generates more precise results than would be the case if we use an in situ laser and it was the ablated material that was being analysed. So we get the high precision results that we would normally get through physical sampling, but we also get the minimally invasive methods of sampling in the first place. So from our perspective, it's a win-win. And this, the portable laser is a fairly new machine. It's a new technique. We applied it for the first time to silver in this study.
And I'm sure the portable laser looks nothing like the image that I have in my head at the moment, but that probably says more about me than about the technology you're using, Jane. Now, I gather that when you did this research, what you were surprised to find was how similar the composition of the coins was, despite the variation in where they'd been found and when they'd been dated to.
Exactly. So these new coins that spring up around 675, it's not just in England, it's also in Francia, so what's now France, and in what is now the Netherlands, so an area known as Frisia in the early medieval period. And they all have the same shatter coinage or early pennies, as they're now known, so much so that there's sometimes debate among scholars about where the coins were minted. It's not really clear because the currency kind of circulates. So that shows that there's a really vibrant economy across the North Sea, linking all of these different regions together. But we were nonetheless surprised that geochemically the coins were the same. You know, it was clear that they shared a source of silver, and it wasn't that coins in the Netherlands were being made from a particular source and coins in England are being made from a different source. No, they had all stemmed from the same silver origin.
And it didn't match any of the known European ore sources. So that meant that theory that was, I think you said, not even in the top three, has it had a bit of a bolt, has it?
Exactly. We thought, okay, well, there's clearly no link to Mel. We looked at the Mel reference data first. We thought, okay, well, let's expand it to the rest of England. You know, there are silver mines in England. We thought it was unlikely because they have very low silver yields. And again, there was no link to England. Then we looked at Roman silver that's been found in Europe. Was there any link? No. Okay, we're thinking, maybe we're doing something wrong here. We then compared it to Umayyad coins, which we've analysed as part of my research project in Oxford. Again, there was no link, so we could rule out Islamic sources of silver. And then, it was sort of at the end that we analysed Byzantine silver, Byzantine lead from places like Turkey, Syria, as well as modern day Istanbul, which is Constantinople. And then we had a pretty good match. So yes, we were genuinely surprised.
And you've described the economic effect as sort of medieval quantitative easing, which is a wonderful concept. Could you explain what it means?
Well, I think it means that the result showed that the silver stock was available in England all the time. It wasn't that they suddenly discovered a new silver source, for instance, from the Mel mine. It already existed. So it's there in their stocks, in their, like the equivalent of banks. And they have to make a decision, which is to liquidate that silver stock and use it to make coinage at a time when there's a demand for coinage and a need for it. And that silver is better served as coinage than it is stored as plate or vessel or whatever other form the Byzantine silver was held in. So it's a way of sort of releasing cash into the economy, which is interesting from our perspective, because then the question becomes, well, why? What was it about this time period that made money, as we understand it, so important and necessary? There must have been a real kind of conceptual shift from, I have this amazing Byzantine silver plate that I use for putting on my table and displaying, and it shows my wealth and my status, to, okay, I'm going to use this to produce coinage, and this is the best use of this, and the way that the silver can best serve my needs now. That's just a really interesting sort of psychological conceptual shift that must have happened in this period.
And Jane, where does Charlemagne come into all of this?
So after these very early pennies, so eventually the Byzantine silver, it is a finite stock. It depletes over time. By the 720s, 730s or so, it's running out and the early silver coins are being debased. So that copper is added to them, the silver content is going down. And eventually the debasement gets too much and the whole coinage needs to be replaced. And around about 750, we find a new silver coinage that is a bit larger than the earlier one. And it has a different style. Kings have their names on this coinage for the first time. So we have Anglo-Saxon kings like Offa, who's famous for his dike, which separates England and Wales. And on the other side in Francia, we have Charlemagne producing these coins as well. So there must be a new source of silver coming into play at this point. And our analysis showed that now, from 750 onwards, it does seem to be Mel silver, which is very low in gold. It has a very distinctive lead isotope ratio. So we could see it quite clearly in the analytical data. And this new source of silver, it comes online in around 750, but it really spreads out during Charlemagne's reign. And he probably has a deliberate policy of intensifying mining at Mel, generating silver as a source, and he's sending it to England. So England is very much in receipt of this continental silver, which shows how much of a strong position Charlemagne is in at this time. We don't know if it's a deliberate policy or not, but presumably there is a kind of royal push behind this increase in silver and control of its distribution that shows that he's very much in control of the resources in his kingdom.
Well, it's really fascinating research and a great breakthrough. I was going to say that you should be awarded a gold medal for it, but I imagine you should probably get a silver one, Jane. So congratulations and well done.
Thanks very much.
That's Dr. Jane Kershaw, Associate Professor of Oxford University School of Archaeology and lead author of the new study, Byzantine Plate and Frankish Mines, The Provenance of Silver in Northwest European Coinage During the Long 8th Century, published in the journal Antiquity.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.